What you are about to hear constitutes an episode of a documentary produced by myself, André Castro, about people who live and use boats inside London. The interviews and field recordings were collected during the winter and spring of 2007. Thank you to all of those who participated and collaborated in this project. Good listening. In this episode, you will hear the interviews with a minister of St. Peter's Church and Jeremy Batch.
I'd like to ask you, what do you do in this space? What's this place about?
You mean in this exact room or in the boat as a whole?
In the boat as a whole.
In the boat as a whole. This boat is really a church. It's London's only floating church. So we use this for a whole variety of church activities, really. We have a church office here, and the main focus of our work is the five meetings that we have every week. So we have three church services here at lunchtimes, primarily for people who work in this local area. So we have those on Wednesdays and on Thursdays, and then we have two church services here on the weekend as well. That's the main focus of our work. We also have a small office here a small counselling room and a kitchen too. But the main focus of our work is obviously the main hall and the Christian meetings, which we have there. So.
And why did you decide to start the church in a boat?
Certainly, no, that's a really good question. There had been Christian work going on here in Canary Wharf for a while, maybe 5 to 8 years previously to us coming here. And they'd basically always struggled because there was nowhere to actually hold their meetings. So they'd tried renting rooms in different wine bars and pubs, but there was nowhere really that we could actually own and that we could actually have it. And to actually have property in this area would have cost far too much money to have made it really worthwhile. So having a floating church in West India Quay seemed like a kind of radical and imaginative and thoughtful solution to the problem. I think many years previously one of the ministers in this area had had this idea but had never really seen anything come of it, then through generous financing by a group of Christian businessmen, we were able to refit this barge here, and were able to start holding Christian meetings in it about 3.5 years ago.
And the barge has been in here since. You converted the barge, and the barge has been staying here, or does it go elsewhere? And
that's right. This is actually an industrial barge from the Netherlands, where it would have transported either grain or containers or whatever on the waterways of Europe, and it was actually refitted as a church in the Netherlands about 3.5 years ago, and then sailed across the North Sea here, and it's been in this location ever since arriving. So it pretty much always stays right here. But I mean, obviously, we could move it, but there's not really any particular need to, because obviously we're here, and obviously everybody knows we're here. So so this is at the moment our kind of full-time location.
So it's more a solution for the lack of space and high price of if you buy a house in here and Docklands. So it's sort of the boat can as a more economic solution for that problem.
I think that's correct. It's mostly a kind of practical and imaginative solution. Of course, we're aware that it is also quite cool and fits in with the kind of general atmosphere of this area. I mean, you've probably seen all the different wine bars and restaurants on the quayside, and there's other things here too. There's like a floating art gallery. There's, you know, other kind of boats too, which are obviously used for a wide variety of different things. So we were also aware that we were doing something that actually made sense in this particular area of the Docklands, where there's so much water as well. So so it was something that was necessary practically and economically, but was also something that we were aware was imaginative and interesting too.
And do you think that by being close to the water, does it make any special? Does it make any difference?
Do you mean in any kind of religious sense or just generally?
In both sense.
I think it's definitely an interesting location for people to come to. So we do get a few people coming, you know, just because they're interested in the idea of a floating church. I don't think it's got any particular religious significance, really. I mean, it's quite nice to actually be here and to see the ducks and cormorants and things, you know, in West India Quay, and I guess that kind of reminds us of God as creator, but that's not really got any particular significance for us actually being here. Rather, it's a place to meet, which is a practical, and a place that folk can come and hear talks about Jesus. So I don't think it's got any spiritual significance, really. We're obviously called St. Peter's Barge, you know, and St. Peter obviously walked on water. But that's not really got any specific meaning for us. That just happens to be the name of the church here.
Do you think that this presence of water that we have in London, does it change the city? Does it make any difference than if we wouldn't have that presence of water either in the river and canals? Would it be the same city?
That's an interesting question. I mean, obviously, this area of the Docklands, there's lots and lots of water here, you know, in the old docks, so this area has lots and lots of water in it, and that's obviously very much created, you know, both what this area was historically but also what this area is today. At the moment, the whole issue of slavery has been in the news a lot, and I mean, obviously, the old Docklands area here was where the produce of slavery came in, was unloaded, and for many years, you know, there have been hundreds of boats here and lots of old warehouses. Now the area is obviously all changed, and it's, you know, more wine bars and restaurants and warehouse conversions, and, you know, the kind of tall buildings of Canary Wharf and all the companies and the finances that have moved in, and obviously it's the water that's really led to all that happening, you know, both with the importance of the maritime trade, and then as that declined, the new kind of finance and leisure industries coming up. So I think on that level, obviously, this area just wouldn't be the area that it is without the water, and a floating church seems to be a really good way to utilise that, and also to very much be in keeping with this particular area of London.
But the floating church seems to be very much in contrast with the place that's in, and very much in contrast with these built buildings that just face and surround the boat, isn't it?
Yep, there are certainly contrasts with the area that we're with. I mean, the as I've said, you know, one of the reasons why we're actually a floating church is because there's no space to be a land church actually in Canary Wharf, you know. So I do think that on a purely spiritual level, there is a difference there, in that I think, you know, we are seeking to be a mission station, if you like, for Canary Wharf. So quite a lot of our work tends to be with those people that work in Canary Wharf, who work in the kind of tall towers of glass and concrete, and obviously a huge part of our work here is trying to speak to them about Jesus, about who he is and what he's done, and how that relates to them. So certainly our location being in contrast to them, both in a physical sense but also in a spiritual sense too, I suppose, very much seeking to offer a truth to people whose lives are very much filled with, you know, finance and materialism and lots of things that look as if they're very successful, but actually under that are maybe still leaving people empty and following other gods that aren't helping them either in this life or in the next. So I think you're definitely right to say that there's a contrast there, you know, in our immediate location. But then that would go for any one of a number of boats which are near us. You know, we've got the art gallery and the restaurants here too. So that would also go for them as well. But I do think with us you're correct in saying that there's a contrast.
Have you ever driven this boat?
No, the local minister here, who's the minister of St. Anne's Limehouse, he has his driving licence for this, And so he drives it whenever it needs to be driven. I think I'm right in saying that it was originally him that actually helped drive it over from the Netherlands. Unfortunately, I haven't driven it. If there's any opportunity to, I would really like to. But I think that the results in West India Quay might not be nice. So I haven't done that. But if we ever had to move it, I would really like to be here when it was moved.
It would be beautiful.
Yes. Yes. No. It would be really beautiful to see it moving, and yeah. But there's no plans for that in the foreseeable future.
But it's a bit of a contradiction in a way. You have a boat, and the thing about having a boat is that you can move it. Mm. You can go with it whenever you want, and leave whenever you want. But somehow having a boat which has a place. She's here to serve a function, and if it leaves, might leave a gap where it is. So somehow it stops being so much of a boat and becomes more like a home or a fixed place.
Yeah, I think that's true. I guess I'd return to the fact that this is essentially a kind of pragmatic and economic solution to a particular problem that we had. That's not very exciting to hear, I suppose, but you know, it definitely is that. I mean, if we wanted to move it, we could. Obviously, the fact that we're a church and that the people that use this live on land and they need to come here week after week after week means that moving it regularly wouldn't be helpful because they wouldn't know where to come. So obviously we like being here. And it actually helps us to stay in the same place. If we were to move, I think you're right, it would leave a gap. But hopefully we'd be able to advertise, and those people that were used to coming to us would be able to find us wherever we were in the future. But there's certainly no plans to move. I mean, we're happy here, and this is where everybody that comes here regularly, both during the week and at weekends, knows.
I think that's it. I don't know. Would you like to say something else about?
Not really. I think other than it's been a pleasure talking to you. And we have services here on Wednesdays at 1:05 and 12:15, and those are just short lunchtime services. The last about 25 minutes each.
that's the fastest you've ever been through that tunnel, isn't it, Cal? I think that's the fastest you've ever been through that tunnel, isn't it?
Don't worry, I'll come up.
And then also, of course, the yachts and the motor cruisers coming in the sea, they will always call us on the VHF radio. Mm. So we also use the radio to communicate with the boats when they're coming into the marina. With mobile phones, it is slightly easier now. In the old days with the narrow boats, we never really knew when they were coming. They would just turn up. But at least now with a mobile phone, they can call us, usually when they come under Tower Bridge. And as a matter of fact, as from September last year, there's now a new regulation on the Thames that all vessels over 45 feet must carry a VHF radio. So that actually applies now to most of the narrow boats. Previously it was only boats more than 65 feet. But now, in fact, most of them have to have the radio anyway, which is actually much better. It's safer for them because they can hear what's going on the river, and they can communicate with us to let us know when they're coming under Tower Bridge, and then we can have the lock ready for them.
Mm-hmm. And but have you been having a life related to boats before working here, before these 2 years?
Yes, well, it would have been about 20 years ago. I've never learned to drive. So when I first started to want to go on holiday on my own, it occurred to me that if I hired a boat on the river somewhere, I could get from place to place each day and have somewhere to sleep and somewhere with cooking facilities and so on. And so it occurred to me that it would be a good idea to try going on a boat. So I did that on the Thames, and found that I enjoyed it, and did that for, I think, 2 years on the Thames, and then a couple of years on the Norfolk Broads. And then my brother Colin also thought it was a good idea, and so he started to come with me. He does drive, of course, so we're able to go somewhere, either in this country, or we've actually been to Ireland several times, because they have marvellous waterways there. So we go and hire a boat somewhere. And doing it that way means that you get to go somewhere different each time, whereas if you have a narrow boat of your own, of course, people, unless you've got a lot of time, you tend to be confined to the same stretch of water all the time, so you go up and down the same bit. But some of these boats here, of course, the owners are retired, so they actually travel all over the country.
Yeah. It's quite a difference if you spend a holiday with in a boat rather than in a car or...
Yes, that's right. Hello, Lassie. Yes, well, it's very, very pleasant. People say it's expensive, which is true, although if you think that you haven't got to pay the cost of staying in a guest house or a hotel, and you've got your transport and your accommodation and your cooking facilities all provided, so there's very little additional cost. If you hire a boat, they normally don't even bother to charge you for the fuel, because in a couple of weeks on a narrow boat you use very little fuel. So it's actually not too bad. And of course, depending how many people you get on board the boat, it becomes progressively cheaper. Because you can get, in the old days, they used to cram maybe 6 or 7 or 8 people onto one boat, whereas these days people tend to have quite a fair-sized boat just for a couple of people. And yes, the facilities are very good. It certainly is as good as a caravan. In many cases, there's a lot more space than on a caravan.
And what year was that?
Oh, well, I would have started, as I say, 20 years ago, okay. I think, when I first started boating on my own. More than that, probably more like 24 years ago, yes, because I was about the first 4 years on my own. And then my brother Colin has been coming for 20. Because we're going back to the Norfolk Broads, actually, for our holiday this year, and I've not been there 20 years, and Colin hasn't been at all before, because there are so many different stretches of water to explore, that going somewhere different each year, it still takes you that time to explore all the different stretches that there are, even in this country. And that's discounting all the nice waterways in Europe as well.
And was that... were the canals at that point very different from what they are now and how they're used nowadays?
Yes, I think it's probably true to say, yes, all those years ago, there was still a lot of work being done on restoring the canals. And a tremendous amount has been done by the Inland Waterways Association and the Waterways Recovery Group, the volunteers who have worked very hard to restore the canals. And in those days, money was very hard to come by. Some of the canals recently have had some support from the lottery fund and other sources, which has been good. So some of the canals, which it was thought might never be restored and reopened, were restored. But the vital thing is for the funding to continue to come in so that they can be kept going, because otherwise all that good work will be lost, really. Because just after the war, the canals, the commercial traffic had come to an end, and so many of them were just being closed down and filled in, and it was people like the Inland Waterways Association that campaigned to keep the canals going, and so they did a tremendous work in keeping these canals open, and we wouldn't have them today if it weren't for what they did. But of course we must make sure that the funding keeps on coming in to keep the canals maintained, and that's what my colleagues in British Waterways and others, of course, they do to try and keep the canals clean and tidy and safe and well maintained, not just for the boats, of course, but for everybody else that uses them, because the canals and the rivers are such an amenity for the walkers, cyclists, fishermen. There's so much more that goes on the canals apart from the boating.
Do you think they are an important part inside a big city like London or inside the UK, that they are, yeah, that they are needed?
Yes, well, it's nearly always an interesting and pleasant walk going along a canal, and especially if you're interested in heritage and industrial archaeology, looking and seeing some of the old structures that are there, like the locks and warehouses. And for example, over here we've got a hydraulic accumulator tower which dates back to 1869, and that's probably the oldest surviving hydraulic accumulator tower, certainly in this country, if not in the world. And it's things like that you stumble across if you're walking around the waterways. So anybody that's interested in history, it's fascinating. But yes, it makes for a very pleasant walk, or somewhere to cycle, or somewhere to go and fish, which you can do on the canals, although you can't fish in the marina here for safety, but you can on the canals normally. Yes, so they're a tremendous amenity. And the boats keep the water stirred up, which is good for everybody. If it weren't for the boats, it wouldn't be possible to do any fishing. But the movement of the boats keeps the water aerated, and that's good for the fish as well.
Do you think it'd be, for example, if we talk about London, because you think it'd be a very different city without such a big presence of water as it has? Like, it has the River Thames, the Lee River, and the Regent's Canal, Crandonian. Would it be very different without all those water sources?
Yes, well, of course, the river, that in many ways was London. London owes its existence to the River Thames, and the location of the city of London, where the Romans were able to build their bridge. It's really, London owes its existence as a city to the river, and so much of our history is related to the River Thames. And then, of course, the waterways like this, the Regent's Canal, that came down to meet the river here.
Beautiful day.
It is a lovely day.
It's interrupting the interview.
That's
there.
Okay. Yes, so these waterways came down to meet the Thames here. Not all of them, of course. Some of them were going in other directions. But the Regent's Canal and the Lee Navigation before it, the lee navigation was originally improved in order to bring the River Lee down into the City of London, and the Limehouse Cut that's over there, that was made in 1770 to bypass the Isle of Dogs, effectively, because the River Lee naturally comes out of Bow Creek on the east side of the Isle of Dogs. And it was wanted to bring the Lee to the City of London. So we had Ye Act for bringing of Ye River Lee to Ye City of London. And the Limehouse Cut was, in effect, the culmination of that, which brought the Lee navigation out on this side of the Isle of Dogs rather than on the other side. And things like corn and other commodities could be brought much more easily into the City of London rather than ending up on what was then the wrong side of the Isle of Dogs.
Why do you think that people decide to come and live in Bow rather than buy a house, or is it just because it's cheaper?
It's not necessarily cheaper, no. Many people think that it is. When you initially look at the costs, it appears to be cheaper. The cost of a boat it appears to be less than the cost of a flat or a house. But, of course, you've got to pay for your moorings and licences, insurance. Basically, the mooring fee is the thing that people have to remember. And, of course, you've got to find somewhere to moor the boat, which in London is difficult. I mean, we have a waiting list of years here for people who would like to actually come and keep their boat here in the marina. But no, I think people are naturally attracted to the water. I think it's probably in our blood that it is very, very pleasant. Just seeing the wildlife and the sounds of the water and gently bobbing about. Now, a lot of people find it attractive, but I think in practice it's probably not very much cheaper in the long term than living in a small flat. Maybe in the middle of London, yes, it is. I think elsewhere in the country it's probably much the same living on a boat or in a flat. But no, there's just something special about being on a boat. Not all of the people here by any means actually live on board. A lot of them just keep their boats here and go out in them on the river when they can. But some of the people here are long-term moorers in the boats over on the far side of the marina there. Whereas the ones we're looking at now, they tend to go out. Some of them don't move much. Mine included, because I don't have much time to take it out. But it's nice to know that it's there, that's the thing. And, of course, the thing about a boat is that you don't necessarily have to sail it anywhere. A lot of people spend years just fitting out a boat, even on shore. And it's just as interesting as restoring an old car or something. You may never actually even put it in the water. But I got my boat originally as a sort of a garden shed where I could just come and potter at the weekends and do a bit of woodwork. And I've had as much pleasure out of doing that than I have from actually sailing the boat.
So you could say perhaps that it's also the contact with water and nature that people look for, but also something that people could care for, could work on, like it could can keep on working on improving your boat, or
yes,
and also become just almost a hobby, or
yes, very much so. As I say, it's a bit like restoring classic cars or anything like that, anything else that people take an interest in. You don't necessarily have to drive the car anywhere, so equally you don't necessarily have to take the boat anywhere. But we always like to see the boats actually go somewhere.
It's quite a strong community around boating people. More of a community than only getting like a flat or something like that.
Yes, that's right. If you're moored on a linear mooring along the canals, of course you can't help but see your neighbours when you come out of your boat. And in some of the other marinas and basins, in some cases, you're sort of practically side by side. Here, we're fortunate that people have got a little bit of space. But yes, I think people get on together, and certainly they tend to like to help one another. And you know, we find the boaters are generally very friendly, especially, of course, a lot of the boaters that we get here are on holiday, or maybe retired, but they're usually in their leisure time, whereas, of course, in the old days, everybody was actually at work. So it was very much a working environment, whereas these days it's more of a leisure environment. So people, I suppose, tend to be more relaxed. Although things can get fraught when things go wrong, so it can get quite exciting sometimes. But no, generally people are fairly easygoing.
Do you have any favourite boat from this one? One that you particularly like?
That's a very good question. No. No, I don't think we have any special favourites. No, no. No, we try to show no partiality at Limehouse. Everybody is treated the same. But of course some of the actual boats themselves are real classics. I mean, like this one we're looking at now, some of the old wooden boats. There's a lot more character to them, of course, than the more modern ones. Mine is 1970, but she's a plastic boat, glass fibre, one of the first glass fibre yachts. But no, some of these old wooden yachts and motor vessels, there's a lot of character in them, and some of the people on board are characters as well.
Do you have a particularly favourite journey that you made on your boat, or a particularly favourite journey that really you remember?
On my own boat, on my own boat, of course, going over to Calais last year, that was particularly exciting on a yacht. But the Llangollen Canal in Wales, for example, I think everybody that's been on that says it's spectacular. But I think any of the waterways in England or Wales or Scotland, they're all very, very attractive. The Caledonian Canal in Scotland, I guess, would be a particularly memorable one, because my brother and I have done that twice, and that's the only one we've actually done twice. And you can go through that in a motor cruiser, a hired motor cruiser, or you can take your own cruiser or yacht through the Caledonian. That's Loch Ness, of course. Loch Ness is about one third the length of the Caledonian Canal, and only a short part is man-made. But that's very spectacular. But even some of the much smaller canals in England or Wales are very attractive.
What's attractive about them?
I think just the scenery. Even going through the middle of a city, whether it's London or anywhere else, you might be in the middle of a city, but you'd hardly know it sometimes from the water.
Do you think they changed the city?
I think in the past, the waterways would go through a city and people would barely be aware that they were there. They tended to be fenced off or walled off. I mean, the Regent's Canal here, for example, that was completely walled off from the general public until fairly recently. You actually had to break in or climb over the wall to actually get near the water. But in more recent years, of course, whereas the city used to sort of turn its back on the water, now, of course, it's becoming very desirable to live near the water, and some of the old warehouses are being turned into very desirable flats. So now, of course, if you've got a canal going through your town or city or a river, it's an amenity that people are very glad to have, whereas previously, many people would barely know it was there. Even our marina here at Limehouse, it's surprising how many people just don't know we're here.
I don't know how many people know about it, or use them, like use the canals just for leisure, just for walk or something.
No, that's right. I think once people have discovered the canals, and yes, I've spoken to some of my friends from back in Harrow or Northwood that have recently discovered all the nice walks you can have around the waterways, because, of course, you're away from the traffic, which is good. Here, for example, you can do a very nice walk for a couple of hours. You can go up the Regent's Canal and go round the Hartford Union, back down through the Limehouse Cut, or do it the other way round, and it's a nice little square or circular route that you can do. And once you've discovered that, it's something you want to do several times. But there are a number of these marinas in London, of course, where the water opens out into a basin. St Catherine's, next to the Tower of London, that was the first one to be restored after the docks closed commercially. St Catherine's was the first, and then we've got this one here at Limehouse. There's another one at South Dock over on the Rotherhithe side of the river. That's been made into a marina as well. And then there's Galleons Point, which is down at the end of the Royal Docks in the old Royal Albert Dock Basin, and that's a marina as well there now. And also, of course, in the West India Docks, there's Poplar Dock, which is one of the old railway docks in the West India Docks, so that's available to boats now. So there are quite a number of marinas where boats can come in. But we're fortunate here because we've got the canal coming in as well. Not all of the marinas have that. South Dock, for example, there used to be the Grand Surrey Canal that came in there, although that was a commercial waterway. But now, of course, we're very fortunate here having the Regent's Canal and the Lea, which are still used by leisure boats. So we get such a good mixture of the narrow boats and motor cruisers and yachts that all come in and share the same bit of water space.
I was about to ask you something, I just get a bit distracted. Trying to remember. But historically, London has been quite dependent on its water resources. I mean, what has been used in here for the past century is quite an important part of the development of the city.
Yes, indeed, yes. Well, the water was the way in which cargo could be transported. And as you know, the canals were developed because it was realised that initially a horse could move very much more cargo in a boat than it could either on its back or towing a cart. So the canals were developed for that reason, that the horse could tow a tremendous weight of goods in a boat. And that was very successful for many years. And then, of course, the steam engine came along, and the railways did eventually supplant the canals, although for quite a while they ran side by side. Of course, the steam engine found its way into the boats and followed by the diesel engine. But inevitably, both the railways and the motor vehicle, after the First War and after the Second War, there were huge numbers of army surplus lorries that were available. And so people were able to buy up the lorries, and it was just cheaper, easier to transport goods by road and also by rail than it was by boat. In Europe, of course, they still do use their rivers for transporting cargo on a very large scale. Here in this country, most of our canals being narrow, it's not quite so practical to bring them back into use for carrying a lot of cargo. But of course, there is still a lot of freight by water on other waterways, certainly on the Thames. And yes, the Port of London is still, people don't realise, although the docks upriver are not used commercially now, Tilbury Docks is still very much in use, and there should be a new freight terminal further downriver being developed over the next few years, the Thames Gateway, and that will be even bigger than Tilbury. So certainly the cargo does still come in by water.
Good. I don't know, would you like to speak of anything else? Something particular?
No, well, I certainly enjoy working on the waterways. You never know what's going to happen next with boats. We like to think that we offer a good level of service. We do our best, and we try to make sure that we're sufficiently staffed so that we can look after the boats with a high level of service, and to do it safely. That's the important thing. There are a lot of things that can go wrong on the water, and we try to make sure that we're always adequately staffed to look after the boaters. So we not only have our lock here, but we have a swing bridge as well. And yes, we never know what's going to happen next. And I always find it very interesting. I enjoy it very much.
Yeah. We'll be glad you can work with this wonderful weather now.
Yes.
And be outdoors.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, it's very nice when you're out in the open air and the warm weather. When we're here at 4:30 in the morning, it can be a bit different. Although in the summer, of course, even that is very pleasant. We're open from 8 till 4 every day in the winter, 8 till 6 in the summer and spring. But at any time of the year, if boats give us 24 hours notice, then they can use the lock as early as 5 in the morning or as late as 10 at night. So we can be here quite early or quite late.
And they need your help to use the lock.
They do, yes. Oh, yes. Because of its size and the fact that it's hydraulically operated, the tidal lock here, that can only be operated by the lock keepers, and the same with the swing bridge, of course. On some of the waterways, even the powered locks on some of the waterways, the boaters operate them themselves. But this is a tidal lock. And We never open both sets of gates at once, because if we did and something went wrong, then we'd lose all the water in the marina here and all the way up the lee to Bow Locks, and that would upset people. So we never open both sets of gates at once. But that was done in the old days, when they had the men available and the stop planks ready to put in if something did go wrong, then they would actually have free flow. But they tended to only operate the lock around high water anyway. So they would, around high water, they'd open both sets of gates and boats could just go in and out freely. But you had to be standing by ready to either haul the gates closed by hand, or if something went drastically wrong, you'd have to put stop planks in. But from time to time, things do go wrong in marinas, but generally these days we try to be very careful to make sure that...
Yes.
Hello, Mike.
Who is it?
Who? Gwynnelly? Yes, I don't know the name of the owner. But no, he's been in, I think, for several years now.